Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello again, everyone. Earlier this past week, I noticed that the invasive honeysuckle bushes that border and or comprise the understory along roads throughout Marion City and County are greening up rapidly. They quickly will become increasingly noticeable since they're one of the very first woody plants to put forth foliage. These bushes quickly shade the understory of any woodland in which they are found throughout all of Ohio and beyond, and are one big reason our spring ephemeral wildflowers have vanished. The wildflowers depend upon the sun of very early spring to grow, but honeysuckle bushes, unlike our later emerging native trees, block this vital resource besides taking up physical space as well as the moisture needed by the smaller ephemeral plants. In addition to the bush honeysuckles, vacant areas throughout Ohio and most every state in the U.S. are choked with a variety of other invasive shrubs from Asia and Europe. Regular listeners will have heard Gail and me ranting about these in the past. Autumn olive, oriental bittersweet, privet, barberry, multiflora rose, burning bush, and so many more. The ornamental calorie pear trees, so widely planted as street trees here in Marion and other Ohio cities, rapidly have colonized roadsides thanks in a large part to another invasive species, the European starling. These avian pests descend upon the trees en masse to devour the tiny hard fruits, and then they scatter the seeds far and wide across the landscape in their droppings. These trees, and the starlings for that matter, are not a problem just in Ohio, but throughout the Midwest and the southern states and beyond. Even the very young calorie pear trees are covered with white blossoms in very early spring, making them highly visible in open meadows. If you have honeysuckle on your property, please cut it to the ground and immediately paint the stumps and stubs with brush killer. That was one of the very first things I did in our yard when we moved to our place in Marion almost 2 decades ago. After treating the 8 or 10 honeysuckle bushes and small trees we had, I was happy to see that they did not sprout back. Now I only have to uproot any first-year sprouts that, thanks to bird droppings, appear annually around the bases of our mature native trees and in other random places in the yard that do not get mowed. Many homeowners with woodlots have no idea what species are growing there, but I feel it's our duty to be stewards of the land that we call our own. Make it a point to learn what is growing on your property, in your backyards. Chances are, privately owned woodland, no matter how large or small, would see a return of our native spring ephemerals, which are beginning to bloom now, if only each landowner would accept the challenge to remove the invasive species that have overtaken there. But there is even a wider problem than the limited variety of plants that we choose for our own landscapes. That is the rapidly plunging population of insects. Before you cry, hooray, let me explain why this is a problem. First of all, you need to understand that 95% of all insects are either beneficial or simply neutral. That is, they don't cause any harm. Now, granted, that still leaves an incredibly large number of insects that are considered harmful in various ways, since estimates suggest that the total number of insect species, including those yet to be discovered, ranges from between 5.5 and 30 million species. So that 5% does include a lot of insects, but that's not where we're going today. If you use harsh chemicals on your garden, you risk killing 95% of the beneficial or neutral insects along with the destructive ones. We all know that bees, along with wasps, flies, moths, butterflies, and others, and even ants, pollinate plants and help them reproduce. Other insects, like certain varieties of wasps, are parasitic on the insects that we deem harmful. Rather than killing a harmful insect outright, wasps lay their eggs on the victim and let their developing larvae do the job. There are, of course, the beneficial bugs that actually do eat bad bugs, ladybird beetles, lacewings, brown beetles, and many more. Praying mantids are omnivorous and eat any insects they can catch, including pretty butterflies. And the big invasive Chinese mantids even can capture and eat hummingbirds. Losing meadows, forests, and weed patches to the relentless expansion of human development is presenting insects with even greater challenges than those posed by herbicides and pesticides. Entomologists know that climate change and the overall degradation of global habitat is decreasing biodiversity. Studies of better understood insect species have suggested that this decline in vegetation might well be causing the decline of the insects associated with them. Ornithologists keep finding that birds that rely on insects for food also are in trouble across many species. 8 in 10 partridges are gone from French farmlands. 50% and 80% drops respectively for nightingales and turtle doves in Europe. And in addition, half of all farmland birds on that continent have disappeared in just 3 decades. At first, many scientists assumed the familiar culprit of habitat destruction was at work. But then they began to wonder if the birds simply might be starving, as they found that all birds that subsist on large insects such as beetles and dragonflies had abruptly disappeared from the landscape. Even in areas relatively undisturbed by human activity, insect populations are on the decline, with climate change as a likely culprit. That's the finding of recent research from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. The study, published in the journal Ecology, calculated the density of flying insects during 15 summers, from between 2004 to 2024, in a remote meadow in the Colorado Mountains. The insects collected included a wide range of mostly winged species, including flies. The insect populations were found to have dropped 72.4% over the 20-year period that they had studied. When asked to imagine what would happen if insects were to disappear completely, scientists use words like chaos, collapse, Armageddon, and that last word has led to the coining of the term insectageddon. In an article in The Guardian back in October of 2017, George Monbiot wrote, "Anyone of my generation can see and feel the change. We remember the moth snowstorm that filled the headlight beams of our parents' cars on summer nights." That age demographic includes me and my husband, and he and I were reminiscing about this very thing one night last summer, following a late-night journey past agricultural lands between Delaware County and Marion. We both can recall from our younger days that on summer mornings after a late-night drive, it used to be necessary to wash the car's windshield and headlights in order to remove the countless dead insects plastered there during the nighttime trip. When was the last time today's listeners had that experience? Think about it. This situation is discussed at length in Michael McCarthy's book, The Moth, Snowstorm, Nature and Joy, published in 2018. I highly recommend this book, which is available as an e-book through our Marion Public Library. Another concern is that too many people, including professional landscapers, have chosen non-native ornamental plants for home landscapes, since these are touted by the nursery trade as being unattractive to insects, and so these alien plants may need less care. Native insect larvae cannot eat most of these alien plants in our woodlots and yards because they have no evolutionary history, that is, they have not evolved together. Some people may point out that the showy blooms of butterfly bush, or buddleia, an invasive shrub native to China, attracts a great number of butterflies that feed on the nectar. However, not one of our thousands of native insect species lays eggs on a butterfly bush. While there likely are many people who view insects as a nuisance and would cheer their demise, nature is an intricate web of interconnectivity that has evolved over millennia, and insect populations affect every level of biology. I mentioned European bird populations a moment ago. It's a fact that songbirds here in America have declined in numbers by at least 40% since just the 1960s. Birds that breed in meadows show an even more dramatic decline. Bobwhite or quail numbers are down 82%, meadowlarks 72%, field sparrows 68%, and the grasshopper sparrow, 65%. But there is more to blame here than just loss of habitat, and now we are coming to the interconnectivity point I wish to make. All animals get their energy either directly from plants or indirectly, that is, by eating something that has fed on a plant. The vast majority of animals that provide food to other animals indirectly are insects. And that is why, as the American biologist, naturalist, ecologist, and entomologist Edward O. Wilson stated decades ago, ants and other insects are the little things that run the world. In addition to the huge and well-known task of pollinating countless plant species, insects are the food source for not only 96% of all terrestrial birds, but even for spiders, reptiles, amphibians, bats, rodents, and many other small mammals, and sometimes even humans. During breeding season, birds require thousands of caterpillars, as well as other larvae, adult insects, and spiders, all high-calorie, high-protein cuisine, in order to raise their offspring. Desiree Narango, a graduate student researcher at Smithsonian Conservation Biology Institute, was the first author of a study published by the National Academy of Sciences in October of 2018. She wrote, "It turns out that a lot of those insects that people see as pests are actually critical food sources for our breeding birds." Now, I'm not saying that everyone should completely remove and replace non-native ornamentals. Of course not. For most people, that would be a Herculean task, physically and financially. But I am strongly urging gardeners to add a wide variety of native plants to your landscape wherever possible, plants that act as host plants for the insects needed by our birds. Even modest increases in the diversity of native plants in our urban and suburban landscapes can increase the number and variety of birds and pollinators and enrich biodiversity. A couple of lovely common native trees that bloom in April are flowering dogwood and eastern redbud. Both offer crucial early spring nectar and pollen to native pollinators, and the respective flowers rely on bees, butterflies, moths, flies, beetles, and even hummingbirds to transfer pollen. By the way, if you happen to have a redbud tree in your yard, be sure to add some of those pink flowers to a salad. And when the young seed pods appear, know that those too are edible. That tree is, after all, related to other legumes, like beans and peas. Finally, if the crazy weather is frustrating your efforts to get out into the yard to play in the dirt, if you have houseplants that would benefit from repotting, now is the perfect time. If none need repotting, at least you may resume feeding your houseplants, since they now are responding to the lengthening hours of daylight. You should not have been fertilizing houseplants over the winter, unless they were the kinds that keep actively growing, such as African violets and geraniums, which will continue to bloom happily year-round if kept fed. You can repot now, or let that go until you're ready to take your plants back outside for the summer. When you are ready, here's a couple of suggestions. When preparing to repot, water your plants with a dilute liquid seaweed solution several days beforehand. This will give the plant a bit of a boost and help prevent transplant shock, especially if you'll be trimming off a dense mass of roots. If you do have a plant that is so root-bound that the water just runs through, well, then just wait to water until you've trimmed and loosened the root ball. If you don't care to prune the roots, move a plant up one pot size, and once it's settled into the new pot, give it another light watering of seaweed emulsion. Have a good quality soilless mix on hand, and if you have access to vermicompost, as I do, mix in a few tablespoons of that when repotting. Now is also the time to clean up your plants, wash off the dusty leaves, and trim out any dead matter. My next segment of In the Green Outdoors will be the week after Easter, so I'll share a few tips then about how to keep those pretty Easter plants healthy as long as we can. This is Carol Kelly saying, be thinking about what native plants you can add to your landscape this year to provide food and shelter for the many creatures that share our earth, in hopes that all of us may continue to experience joy here in the green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it to WZMO@roadrunner.com. Thank you for listening.